All right, Alexander, we haven't done a video in a long time on the ECB and the EU economy, and given all the lockdowns and all the chaos that the CV has caused, I can't imagine things to be on the bright side. Not that they were before the pandemic and the lockdowns, but also given Brexit and everything else, I mean, it just does not look good. What's the latest on the European economy?
Well, I think you actually put your finger on the most important words, because it wasn't looking terribly good even before. I mean, what we had, if you remember, is the cycle was, you know, they introduced the single currency in 2000. We had an uncontrolled credit boom, basically. Then there came the financial crisis. Then we had, it became very quickly very obvious that there were massive problems across the Eurozone, and the single currency was hugely exacerbating those problems. The EU did absolutely nothing to deal with those structural problems, which in fact are steadily getting worse, and that's what we're going to come to in a moment. But what they did do was they imposed this terrible austerity across the European periphery, the core regions, rather than face up to the major structural problems of the Eurozone. This has slowed the European economy to a crawl. It has been a major factor, I think, in hardening British public opinion against the EU and in making them decide that they don't want to have anything to do with this project and deciding to leave the EU, which, of course, is what they're doing. And in fact, the EU has never really recovered as an economy from the financial crisis. I mean, the US did achieve a recovery. The EU never really has done. And if you go to Southern Europe, to places like Italy and Greece and those sort of places, their economies are still significantly smaller than they were before 2008, or at least they were significantly smaller before 2008, before this latest crisis hit in March with the pandemic. Now we have had another major contraction. The European economy is, of the major economic regions of the world, the one that is going to be by far the hardest hit. It is looking at a very severe contraction of over 10% of GDP overall. And what we are learning is that in Europe, in Southern Europe especially, there is also, on top of everything, a major deflation crisis. That is to say, prices for retail goods are falling because demand has been crushed, and that is causing debt levels, or rather the debt burden, to rise. And these dynamics are now intensifying, and they're causing even greater problems across the Eurozone. So it looks as if these attempts by the ECB to electronically create money, to print money, to buy bonds, government bonds, to in effect try to keep this thing running, are not working. They're not able to stop this explosion of debt and this decline of demand and this rise in the debt burden. And it looks increasingly also as if that famous breakthrough moment that we were hearing so much about, the so-called EU Hamilton moment, with that 750 billion euro bailout program that was going to be published, funded rather by bonds, by euro bonds of certain description, that seems to be tailing off, and it comes to nowhere near enough to solve these problems. And most of that money, if it ever appears, which some people are starting to doubt, is not going to start appearing until the second half of 2021 at the earliest. So EU economy has always been in a bad way. It's now just got an awful lot worse, and things are going to get worse going forward. And it looks as if these problems are now so deep-seated that even if the pandemic ceases soon, which, by the way, I think it probably will, for all kinds of reasons, but I, you know, that's another program. But even if it ceases relatively soon, that's not going to help the European economy very much, which is basically waterlogged. It's going underwater.
What are the southern European economies undergoing deflation right now? Are you talking about Spain, Italy, Greece?
I was talking about Spain, Italy, Greece, Portugal, also Ireland, by the way.
Ireland also.
Yeah, which is, of course, not technically a South European economy, but it is very much part of this system. When prices start falling, retail prices falling at the rate that they're doing at the moment, that is an infallible sign that demand is collapsing. And pouring money through money creation, monetary policy to try and reverse that is what the British economist John Maynard Keynes called pushing on a string. It doesn't work.
Well, what about going back to Ireland?
Mm.
Wasn't their housing market kind of going through the roof, at least the prices, and yeah, that was also causing a lot of pressure? So how does the deflation, does that affect at all the...
Right, okay. This is the complicated thing, because you have both a deflation, you can have a deflation in retail prices, which is, you know, the prices you pay when you go into a shop. And also you can have inflation in some asset prices, like housing prices, because money, instead of going into actual productive goods, is being parked in assets, in stocks, in shares, in houses, in properties, in commercial buildings, in all those sort of things. So you can have both at the same time. It's not impossible. And it seems to be happening in some parts of Europe.
All right. I mean, I'll tell you right now, in Greece, at least from, say, the travel industry has been completely crushed. Yeah. I mean, like 86% drop month on month. I mean, compared, like, July, August numbers compared to last year has been like an 85-86% drop. Yes. Obviously, travel in the airline industry has just been completely obliterated.
Yes.
What's the plan then if this recovery slush fund is not even nearly enough to bail these countries out? Italy's a huge economy. Spain's a massive economy. How do you go forward?
There is no plan. The only plan that would work, the only plan that could conceivably work, would be dismantling the euro. And they're not prepared to do that.
So what are they going to do?
Well, goodness knows. I mean, there's been talk, and this is the thing we've discussed many times on many programs, and what Emmanuel Macron wants to see. He wants to convert the European Union into a single country, a single economic zone, run by a single government from Brussels. Ultimately, I think he imagines himself controlling it with a single bank, a single banking system, a single taxing system. He wants to, in other words, make it into the United States of Europe. But that isn't going to happen. There is too much opposition in Europe to this. So given that alternative, the Macron alternative, is impractical, sooner or later, what is unsustainable cannot be sustained. I do expect that the euro will eventually go. The problem is the political investment in this is so enormous that they are resisting it, and they're kicking the can down the road by patching up agreements every so often. And, you know, I predict we'll be hearing more about euro bonds before long. There'll be more, another rescue package, more euro bonds, more conditions, more acrimony, more anger at European Council meetings. But that's what they will do. They will just keep tinkering with this, kicking this thing along, and you'll get all the governments in all of these South European states that remain still, for some extraordinary reason, committed to this project, which is strangling their economies. They'll be saying to their electorates, look, keep the faith. This latest project, this latest deal that's come up, that's going to transform things. We're coming out of this tunnel. There is no exit from this tunnel until the euro goes. And eventually, sooner or later, the penny will drop. And I predict the country where that will happen first is Italy.
All right, final question. Can you say that the lockdowns and the pandemic was an excuse? In the U.S., you could say it was, there was definitely a political angle to knock out the Trump economy. That's why they drove so hard into the lockdown, certain states. I think that's, I don't think you can question that. I don't want to say it's fact, but I think it's pretty clear that a lot of states run by blue governors used the pandemic and the lockdown as a political weapon in order to hit the Trump economy. And I think they're still using it as a political weapon. Can you say that in Europe, and maybe I'm going on a stretch here, can you say in Europe they're using the lockdown as an economic and political weapon? In other words, they continue to stretch out this lockdown across Europe and to continue to depress the economies across Europe in order to push the Europeans into such a state of fear that they go along with a Macron type of United States of Europe or whatever they may want to call this new entity. And maybe in the UK, they want to push a state of fear in order to prevent a Brexit. Because there are some rumblings in the UK that Brexit shouldn't happen, given all the lockdowns and the economic pressure. Maybe I'm stretching it a little, but just a thought.
I think that may be true in one or two places, but I don't think it's true overall. If it's true anywhere, it's most likely to be true in France. I mean, Macron at one time did seem to be talking a bit like this. And of course, he was taking a very authoritarian response in France. And he did use the pandemic and the lockdowns to try and still the Gilets jaunes. I mean, that was an important, you know, card that he played. But I think that even in France, the problems with the economy have become so great that even Macron now is finding it impossible to pursue that policy any further. And I'm not even convinced that he wants to, because what has happened is, I mean, his popularity, which briefly rose in the spring and summer, has now fallen back. So I don't get the impression that that is the general, that there's a general policy of this. I think the thing I'd say about the Europeans is that, quite blunt about this, they're not too bright. I don't think they're able. I mean, you know, I'm going to say this. I mean, you know, I think you can look at the Clintons and the Obama people in the US, and you know, they do have that sort of ability to plan in that way. I think the Europeans are just not that wired up, frankly, to come up with these kind of things. So that's my own sense of this. So I think there's been an awful lot of muddle and chaos, but I think in France, definitely, initially it was used in that way. But I don't think that they planned it in quite that fashion. And I think if they did, that's run its course, by the way. I mean, I really do think so. I mean, I think at the moment, all the evidence is that attempts to impose lockdowns are provoking far more opposition, certainly than they were doing in the spring and summer, and probably are unpopular. I mean, in Britain, there is huge resistance to more lockdowns at the moment.
All right. I'm just trying to figure out why they seem to be steering the boat towards the rocks.
Well, I mean, well, as I said, they're not too bright. They're deeply ideological. I mean, again, I think this is a thing I'd say about the Democrats in the United States. It's distinguished. And I don't want to say the Democrats are not ideological. Unquestionably, they are. But they're brainier about their ideology than some of the people in Europe are. I mean, they're more cynical, if you like, in the way they apply it. And, you know, if you compare, there is no equivalent in Europe to a Barack Obama or a Bill and Hillary Clinton. They don't have that kind of, you know, cunning. I mean, there's no Podestas around here. It's hard to put it in a simpler way as they can. If you follow German politics, and I do, by the way, I mean, there are one or two fairly clever people there, but overall, it's not a terribly impressive lineup. You can't compare it to that in the US. And that is why the US is so much more interesting in some ways. So these people just do what the rule book that they've assimilated to tell them. They're unbelievably aggressive in the way they go about it. They're absolutely brutal and bullying. But as I said, I don't think that they're brainy enough to think it out as in quite that way.
Yeah, sounds like they're just hardcore technocrats and bureaucrats through and through.
Absolutely, that's certainly my impression of them.
Yeah, there's rumors that rumors. I think there was an interview of Christine Lagarde to wrap it up that she said that she wants to push Europe to create a digital currency, like a Bitcoin type of structure.
Yeah, I mean, the Germans weren't like that at all. Absolutely. I'm sure there are lots of people in Germany. I mean, this is the thing about Christine Lagarde. I mean, talking about her, I've made very clear my views about Christine Lagarde, and I think she's both incompetent and corrupt, but I also think she's certainly much more imaginative than some of the people we're talking about. But you know, when she talks about digital currencies and those kind of things, I mean, it's a sign of growing desperation, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. We'll leave it there. As Europe gets closer and closer to crashing, we'll be monitoring the situation. Alexander Mercurius, thank you.
Can I just say, this is the big geopolitical story around the world. I mean, in some ways, you know, people talk about the fragility of the US. The US is as solid as a rock if you compare it to Europe. Europe is where the real crisis is coming.
There it is. Mm-hmm. There it is. Good thing the UK is leaving.
Well, it's also why it's leaving. I mean, I think that's this is the thing people, you know, I talk to lots of British people, which is one of the things. And one of the things that you'd find, you know, people, working class voters in the north of Britain who voted Leave, they've never been particularly keen on the EU, but they saw what happened. It was on their television, in their newspapers. They traveled to the countries in Southern Europe. They saw what happened there. They said, we absolutely do not want to be a part of any of this. And this is a very underestimated aspect. I know about this because it's been brought up with, you know, people bring it up with me. You know, we saw what happened to Greece. We saw what happened to Italy. We don't want anything like that here. We don't want to be involved in a community, as he calls it, a union that does those sort of things. And we think it's not right for Britain to be part of that. So that's one of the factors that caused Britain to leave.
All right, we'll leave it there. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much, guys. Please subscribe, please like, and drop us a comment down below. Let us know what you think of this video. Donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and we are on Subscribestar as well. Your donation helps keep this channel up and running, and your donation will help us weather the storm of the eventual crash of Europe. And also go to the Durant shop, pick up a magic mug. Speaking of the UK, this is my
I've got the UK. The Union Jack, the British Union Jack. And we've also, of course, got our amazing porcelain mugs, which are the best mugs in the world, bar none. They're just fantastic, phenomenal, beautifully made mugs, which our viewers love. And the feedback we get for them is tremendous. But we've also got enameled mugs. And this is an enameled mug with the flag of England, which is, of course, the biggest kingdom within the United Kingdom of Great Britain, of which the Union Jack is the flag. And at the moment, I am feeling very patriotic, and you will find that I've also got hats with the Union Jack flag there, and another hat also with the Union Jack flag there. And I've got a shirt, though it's unfortunately in the wash at the moment, with the Union Jack flag. So we got lots of flags on many of our products. If you are looking for your own flag on a hat, on a mug, on a shirt, and you can't find it, just let us know. But more likely than not, it's coming anyway, very, very soon. You'll find lots of flags. You will find amazing things. I said how wonderful our mugs are. Our shirts are amazing. Also, again, we get tremendous feedback about them. They're all 100% cotton. They come long-sleeved like this shirt, but there's also short sleeve t-shirts, and there's the best polo shirts in the world. And we've also got hoodies and hats, obviously, that we showed you. And we've got baseball hats and trucker's hats and embroidered hats, and we've also got amazing ebooks. So you come and you support the channel by coming to our shop, but you also become the owner of these wonderful and amazing things. So come to our shop, support the Duran. Alex will quickly remind you how to do that.
You'll find the link to the Duran shop down below in the description box. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.